Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. In our today's episode, we're going to be taking a look at Google's announcement into checking accounts. And so to help me with this episode, I have Prasanna Narayan, who is the head of product at Ondot Systems, and Sarah Grotta, who is the director of the Debit and Alternative Products Advisory Service at Mercator Advisor Group. Now, during this episode, we're also going to be taking a look at the trust factor of big tech and how that might come into play, and also some of the regulatory challenges that are going to be faced in the industry with all of these new big tech companies entering the space. So without any further delay, let's start the show.
You know, we heard some very interesting news last month coming from Google in a Wall Street Journal article that stated that they were going to be getting into the business of offering checking accounts. I can't say that bankers or those in the payments industry were particularly surprised, but maybe the timing was. And really, there hasn't been a great deal of information that has come out since that initial Wall Street Journal article. But what we do know is that Google will be offering these checking accounts through Citibank and also Stanford Federal Credit Union. We also know that the product's going to become available sometime in 2020, and it's going to be offered through the Google Pay wallet. So again, you know, other than that, I don't think that we know too much. So, you know, we're kind of left sort of speculating a bit about what really might happen once Google enters this marketplace. You know, it might be just an opportunity to provide an account to a company, their P2P GPay services. So, you know, they can offer something that's similar to the P2P solutions offered by Venmo or Square Cash cash card solution, where they have a combination of a payment vehicle along with an account. You know, perhaps they're also looking at a larger strategy, a larger, longer term strategy to play in the neo or challenger bank space. But again, we really don't know at this stage. One thing I think is interesting, though, is at this point, they have announced the partnerships of the banks and credit union that they're going to be working with, and they're sort of upfront getting as just much airtime, if you will, at this stage of introduction as the Google brand. And I think that they might be signaling to regulators that these financial institutions are going to be really involved, most likely on the compliance side, and perhaps they'll have a role in the customer service as well. So, you know, I think what worries bankers the most likely with this announcement by Google is that certainly Google doesn't have to make any money on these particular checking accounts that they want to offer. They can offer all sorts of free products and lose money on them if they want to on a product basis. But, you know, they may be able to gain a lot of customers and a lot of associated data.
All right. Well, thank you, Sarah and Prasanna, for joining me on today's episode. So, Prasanna, the first question is for you here. So we just heard Sarah give a general overview of the space and Google's move into checking. And we've also recently witnessed the launch of Apple Card. So this is a little bit of a multi-part question that I have for you. So what is the next consumer brand to enter the personal finance space? You know, perhaps this could be Amazon, as we've kind of seen them try to dip their toe into the water here a little bit. And then also, how does geography play into this? You know, do we look at this and kind of say, you know, is Google bringing its business model from India to the U.S.?
Thank you. That's a great question. And Sarah, that was a very comprehensive summary. And I do agree with many parts of what you've mentioned in terms of especially there's not a lot of detail that came from the announcement. So I'm sure that there is still more things that are being worked out in the detail as to exactly what that means. And so to answer the question, I'll try to address and a couple of points that I want to mention specifically, what's the next consumer brand? So we've heard, you know, Facebook as another leading consumer brand sort of stepped into Facebook Pay and also into a cryptocurrency. But Google's announcement, specifically in digital banking and as a partnership with traditional players, is actually a lot closer to home than cryptocurrency, if you will, because that's going to take more time to mature. And we've also heard Amazon, to your point, it was in discussions with Chase to offer checking account and debit card. And we all know it already has a co-brand with Chase, your Amazon Visa card, for example. Google does have a widespread geography presence around the globe, and they are successful in many markets, and India being one of them, especially due to the Android presence. And also, the consumer mindset in those markets is significantly mobile-driven than in the U.S. Even though we use mobile extensively today in U.S., but the use cases and the functions that mobile is driving in markets like India are significantly more extensive, especially when it comes to finance and commerce. But I also think that what worked in India for Google may not exactly work in the U.S., considering the consumer mindset and the infrastructure. India laid out a huge infrastructure as to how the banks get networked. You see that in Europe with open banking. U.S. is not quite there yet. So that same mindset may not work here. But the important point is experience and convenience are becoming more mainstream alongside trust and security, right? So existing players, the banks have to balance that in how they appeal to today's consumer and avoid being pushed to the sideline or, you know, go behind the scenes to enable a big tech that does the front end part of it. The only other player I would watch out for really would be Ant Financial or Alipay that you know that has a big presence in Asian market and what they would do in U.S.
Excellent. No, I certainly think that's very interesting that you in particular also bring up Ant Financial, just because obviously as we're kind of seeing with just the economies in general, it's just obviously the world is becoming more flat and you're seeing a lot more of this different tech companies kind of playing in these different arenas here. All right, so Prasanna, for our next question here, so what type of threats does big tech pose to financial institutions? And also, what are they good at which might disrupt banks, particularly smaller banks and credit unions?
Yeah, it's a good question. I actually wanted to make a couple of more references specifically when it comes to the consumer brand before I give a point of view on this one. Uber and Lyft. Right, there are two big consumer brands that are getting rapidly popular, and we know both of them have actually gone down the path. And it's a very specific use case, right? Uber launched on a debit card-based checking account for their drivers to be able to push money quickly. So it's a fundamental checking account or a value store, if you will, for the money that's being earned, which is the first point of entry for financial services. So they have created that to solve a specific pain point or a problem. And I think that has a lot of traction to take on as a consumer brand entering into financial space because it just is an adjacent function to what Uber and Lyft does today in terms of transportation, simplifying transportation. Now to address your specific question, like what do big tech pose to financials? So Uber and Lyft does pose that sort of a risk because they are creating their own checking account for the drivers and people who use Uber. But in broadly, the big tech's strength is really good consumer-facing technology. It's very hard to do from a banking perspective, but these guys have mastered the way in which they can reach to the consumer, create experiences. As I mentioned in the previous point, experience and convenience, right? If you've seen what Apple, Amazon, and Google has done, they've focused maniacally on creating embedded experiences. Right? They have gone above and beyond to think about how consumers' lifestyle is today and how they function, and that revolves around mobile. And they have built apps and experiences that saves consumers the time, the ability to get stuff done, and get more information and become more organized around the experiences they create within the mobile. Now, if you take all that and apply that to the financial management, that's what the financial institutions have to keep an eye on if they are reaching to their consumers in the same way when it comes to how do I manage my money on a day-to-day basis? How do I focus on my short-term and long-term financial goals? you know, most consumers don't make this into a planned exercise. And there is a consumer persona that doesn't give a lot of weight. So when you're able to apply behavior and persona and come up with a recommendation and advice that sort of helps the consumers to go in that direction, that could be pretty powerful. Convenience of spending and understanding how you're spending, and the digital self-service, right? But branch and phone calls, going to a branch to do something or calling the bank in order to solve something is very single-threaded and it takes time. If I can do that on my mobile while I'm doing something else as an interactive part, that's pretty powerful for today's consumer, right? So smaller regional institutions, to your point, has to really think about how do they change the way they service, how they do the level of service that happens in branches versus digital in today's consumer. So this can go from how do I digitally open an account, create an experience, create a card and digitally give them a card, and drive commerce, spending, deposits, what have you, all of that, you know, think about it from a more digital experience. I think that's where these big techs are good at in creating those experiences.
Do you think that that might actually end up driving more partnerships between big tech and financial institutions, you know, to the extent that tech companies are really good at the consumer experience, yet, you know, bankers are good at, you know, all the stuff in the back room that makes transactions move and you know, money move and things like that. Do you think at some point we'll start to see more cooperation between sort of both camps?
I absolutely think so. There's definitely going to be strong partnerships in how some of these experiences are going to come together. And we've already seen in the last 4 or 5 years with the launch of the wallets that Apple and Google did alongside with the networks, you know, you have thousands of banks participating in that as a program to enable their, you know, customers to be able to use that wallet with a complete awareness of that they're doing. They're facilitating that experience. So that just is one use case of actually being able to tap and pay with your device and how you could do that more securely. And you're now trusting that because your bank is alongside with you and supporting that experience, right? So now translate that into other services and how you could make that happen. So there's certainly room for partnership. There's certainly room for making that. But the tricky part is going to be how a consumer perceives that partnership and to whom they think that the value of interaction is happening. Is it with Google or is it with Citi or is it with Stanford, whichever the case might be? That's where I think the focus is going to be in terms of, but there's definitely room for partnership in creating these value-added products for consumers.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, it may end up get to the point where, you know, certain individuals have a brand preference, right? You were speaking earlier about the power of brand. And, you know, some individuals may be much more comfortable banking under the Google brand, and some may feel much more comfortable with an organization that has bank or credit union after it. It'll be interesting to see how this transpires.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you also see some of the new neobanks that have started to come into the market in U.S. And they know that, you know, even though they have that, they actually partner with another player in order to make that work. So the neobank brings the tech and the user experience, but there is a banking partner that sits behind in order to make that happen. So we're going to definitely see these things taking shape in how the partnerships are going to come alive, and the traditional players may still have a stronger role to play there.
Oh, excellent. So I'd like to dive in a little bit deeper into a little bit of that conversation that you and Sarah were talking about there, Prisna, for a moment there. And especially when it kind of comes to just kind of Google and the trust factor that we have. You know, obviously that these big tech companies, they have the strong user experience and customer acquisition part of it pretty much in hand. But is there really kind of some big tech reputational baggage that they have, you know, really kind of taking a look at that trust factor? And do you think that that trust factor might particularly work well in Google's favor or against Google in a financial institution type of a role?
Yeah, you know, I think about that as well in terms of, you know, what do they have? What is this that they can't do effectively? In my view, I think each of the big tech have sort of a different kind of a baggage. You know, particularly with Google, use of data or how Google is going to use the data is a big factor in how consumer, even any partnering financial institution, is going to come to trust Google with their money, right? And when I say data, I'm not necessarily meaning the personal data or transactional data, right? So Google has figured out ways in which I have that and I can use that, right? It's about the behavior and one's actions as data that can inform what I'm going to do next and what I'm inclined to do. I think that's where the power, if the services that the big tech are going to offer to me as a consumer based on that, right? So it's about data off the consumer and data about the consumer. There's a subtle nuance and a difference there. And that's just a harder part to overcome for Google, but that's the strength, right? So if they were investing significantly in AI and machine learning and behavior and looking at data behavior as a data point in order to facilitate what's the value, the next value that I can bring to the consumer. If you look at Apple, Apple is quite well trusted, right? It's all about security. It's all about trust. And they make a big important factor in the way they announce their products. So, but it's an ecosystem play, right? So Apple by itself is a closed loop ecosystem. So anything we do, so if I can't get an Apple card, if I have a, you know, a Note 10 or a Galaxy, right? So it just is limited in that context. And their global reach is also not as same as what a Google has, you know, when you go outside of the United States or, you know, some of the top European countries. The last one I would say is the baggage would be the strong headwind on regulations. I don't think we could avoid that as they start to deepen their services on financial services, simply because this is not an area where people have paid a lot of attention, but in the speed of technology is letting them get into the space very quickly. So now it's a question of how they're going to get caught up in it. And that's one of the reasons why I feel Google is putting the traditional financial institutions front and center to do some of this.
Yeah, I certainly think that that's, you know, extremely interesting, because, I mean, when you look at it just from like a almost a branding perspective, right, you saw Apple come out and they really kind of basically said, hey, here's a product or financial product that's not designed by a bank. It's designed by us. And on the other end, you've got Google kind of saying like, hey, we're going to be part of this, but it's mainly the financial institutions that are part of this. And as you brought up, there's that whole regulatory aspect here where I think you see a lot of companies kind of walking that line and kind of seeing, well, which way is the wind going to blow on this? So from that perspective, what do you anticipate kind of seeing as some of the challenges from that regulatory perspective that Google might encounter? And also, how could Google's enormous amount of consumer data potentially work for them?
Yeah. So, you know, we've already heard that many folks within, you know, Congress and Senate have come out publicly in many of the finance news streams to say that they're concerned about the lack of regulation on big techs as they enter into financial services. And they feel that there's really not had a chance to form a regulation of how that would play. And so there's a lot of momentum and attention in it. And we've seen that as we went through this whole cryptocurrency and blockchain. It started to go down a fast path, and then there is regulatory. So, there, you know, there's a lot of things that's weighing and come down. And to the point about Google, though we haven't heard a whole lot in the test and learn, there's enough caution to put a traditional financial institution in the front and center. So they are going to go through that, but the more that they rely on a banking institution, I think they would be able to cross that part from that perspective, right? But their strength is not about, you know, going past the regulation. It's really the strength is about the data. And to you answer your question, like, how do you make the enormous amount of consumer data work for them? It's really data about the consumer, their behavior, their spend patterns, their income patterns, their saving potential. To actually draw a plan for a smarter money management and then push that to to the consumer in the ways that traditional financial institutions are not thinking about. But the challenge really for someone like Google or Facebook is how this entry is actually going to, everybody's going to wonder that, right? How this entry of into financial services is actually going to help their mainstream business. What is their mainstream business? It's about search and ads. So how is this data going to help? And that's the hardest factor for them to overcome. And that's exactly what the regulators are going to look at and saying, this interplay of you, someone like a Google or Facebook entering into financial services is actually going to be limited in providing that service, or it's ring-fenced so that it doesn't, get into the mainstream business of what they have. The same with Apple, right? So Apple is an ecosystem built and it's introducing cards. There's one way to justify saying, hey, we want more use of the device. If they say, my whole goal is to sell more devices and I'm creating those services that creates more stickiness to those devices. But they just didn't introduce an Apple card, right? They've done the way that the card is presented to the consumer. There's significant disruption, right? So right from APRs to how the cashback comes and the financial health aspect of the frequent payments and, no late fee, no anything. So there are lots of things that they've done where consumers have a way to stray away from credit cards if they've done to disrupt that. So those are things that helps them into the mainstream, right? So it's about stickiness of the business. And Google has to overcome that, saying how you're going to use this in your mainstream business. So it's going to be a hard sell for Google to say financial services is going to be my mainstream business when it isn't.
I think you're right. And another way that is reflected, I believe, is the fact that we really haven't seen any fintechs or big tech, if you will, seriously pursue a banking charter. I think even this week, Robinhood dropped its plans to get a bank charter. And we've seen, sort of fits and starts with, Square thinking it's going to get an industrial loan charter, or another organization pursuing the OCC fintech charter. And it just hasn't happened. And I think maybe we're at the point here where, perhaps the realization is that, on the tech side, tech folks are going to stick to what they're really good at and leave some of the financial services magic up to the bankers.
So just one last point on that, right? There could be a segment of consumers who may not know the subtleties of using the data, how to move to mainstream, or even care, right? So you have a segment of people who may not, but people in responsible positions are going to care about this aspect, and it's really going to come out in the way that they're going to get regulated.
No, certainly very interesting there. And as we talk about the regulation aspect here, now typically we don't talk about politics, but when we talk regulation, obviously that's something that's going to kind of come up with that. So Prisna, I am curious, for my last question here, do you think that the current political climate might be an important factor in Google's and Apple's latest move? And also, could mixing banking and technology be a risky political move?
Yeah, it's certainly a tricky question. So I think the risk is going to be more around what regulation comes out of the political system, and which is the front wind here in terms of the how the political system is going to influence the regulation and how the big techs are going to address it and how that's play. But to a large extent, these organizations have played the political angle, at least the ones that were in conversations, played quite safe. They've tried to take a neutral position. They've been, cooperative and supportive in how they, and that's an important factor for them if they were to sustain the changes in the political landscape and how the regulations are going to come out. I strongly think that they're going to stay neutral. They're going to play to the right aspects of how they support the regulation if they were to have their skin in the game for a long run. So I don't think that they're going to be really become a risky part from any political move, but watch out for regulations that comes out of it.
All right. Well, thank you, Sarah and Prasanna, for taking the time today for speaking to me about Google's latest announcement. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.